the basic mechanisms, and one of the things we will look at today would be aspects of group communication. And here the point is that we would have a group of processes which solve a problem jointly, and the group communication is basically facilitates the interaction between these processes. And there are, if we look at the motivation of it, there are a number of things where group communication can be a viable approach. If you look, for example, at computer-supported cooperative work and an implementation of computer-supported cooperative work would be something like groupware. And one possibility which is common in that area are these multi-user editors. And in that sense, you have multiple people working jointly on a document, and they are located at different places, and you have the network in between, which basically interacts with the different editor instances. And an important part of it, if you have a modification on one site, you have to propagate that to all the other sites, basically to reflect all the changes. The other thing is where you might use group of processes and group communication, fault tolerance. In that sense, you have a replication of services. If you have not have just one service, but you have multiple instances of the service, and if one server fails, then basically the other servers take over the job and provide the service to the customers. And in that sense, you might lose performance, but you don't lose functionality. The other thing is where you use it quite often is object localization. You put all object servers which manage the location of objects into a group of processes. And if they search for an object where it is currently located, the request is sent to this group of object servers. And then they would react to it, the one which basically manages currently the object would then answer the request and then provide information where it's currently located. Otherwise, you would have to contact the first server. The first server asked, comes back and says, well, no idea, I have no information. You go to the next one, third one, and so on. If you think of cellular phones, there every object or every phone has something like a home zone or a home server. Therefore, always the home server knows where it is. And in that sense, you always know to contact the home server. You can also have a completely decentralized approach that you don't really have a home server. You have something like, depending who, which server actually manages the object currently has information about it. Therefore, in that sense, you would put it into a group of object servers together. The point is here that the functional components, in that sense, our processes, are composed to a group, and therefore, in that sense, the group is an abstraction here. Group is an abstraction. And sometimes for the customers, they are not really know who is behind that group. They only know the address of the group, and then they sent a message to the group. Here, so you would have something like a message to a group, and as a consequence, that it's automatically propagated to all group members. And the individual sender here does not really know who is behind that group. And we will see, we could have something like fixed groups, where the group composition is fixed, or we could have something like dynamic groups, where you have a coming and going of group members. The important issues related to it, group membership. As I already mentioned here, you have a static versus dynamic situation. And with respect to dynamic, you especially if you have replicated servers, it could be that you might dynamically create a new server providing the service because another server failed, and if that failed server comes back, that another group server might go away. And therefore, in that sense, you have a dynamic situation. The other situation, you could have something like a centralized and versus decentralized centralized control. And in a centralized control, you would have a central group management server, which basically knows the group composition. And therefore, in that sense, if a new member comes, it has to contact the group management server and then join. In a decentralized case, the knowledge is basically distributed across all the group members. Therefore, the group members either know every member, or you have something like that they know part of it, and another one knows part of it, and they basically jointly know information about who belongs to the group and who does not belong to the group. The other thing is here to support group membership. The one important aspect is group member addressing. Therefore, if you send a message, you address the whole group and send a message. How do you have error handling if a member is not reachable? And in that case, especially, we will later see something like this atomic broadcasting, that either you send a message to all the group members or to none, because in order to avoid failure behavior or a failing behavior, in a sense that part of the group members receive the message, part do not receive it, that's an erroneous situation, therefore you try to avoid that. And also another important part of it, well, how do you maintain a correct message delivery sequence, that if the messages are delivered in the correct sequence to all members of the group. The point is, where do you provide the group communication support? Well, you could have it in the operating systems layer, if the operating system provides it, or the other thing is would be something like a middleware layer. Usually, the second approach is done, the middleware layer, and that's we will see then, for example, ISIS as an example to provide a middleware layer on top of the operating system. But which is provided then for the application programmer to program group communication. Communication can be multicasting in a local area network, broadcasting also in a local area network, or you have to map it into a unicasting, especially if you look at the internet environment. If you have multicasting, certainly I already mentioned the uses of it here, fault tolerance based on replicated services or to locating objects or multiple update, especially if you have, for example, a file server replicas a document and then you send an update to all the documents. And the point is here to get synchronization in order to get a global consistent behavior. And that's the important part of it, in especially if you have replicated services. In order to do that, you need some kind of a synchronization between all participating group members. And the point is here, either you have something like a total ordering, or you would have something like a causal ordering, and we will later see how that is done. Group addressing is the next part of it, by what we can look at it. Central approach, as I mentioned, you have this single group server which maintains all the group membership, who is a member and who is not decentralized. Each group member is aware who is a member of it. The point here with the central group server, you have something like a single point of failure. And if the central server fails, basically group communication doesn't take place. The other situation is, in the decentralized approach, is changes of group membership is more costly. So here, changes group membership is more costly. And because you have to change the group membership in a coordinate way. And generally, this is done in a way that you make group communication idle, in the sense there are no open messages floating in the network. You wait until all the messages are delivered to all the current group members. Then you don't allow sending new messages. Then you initiate the changes of the group membership. And when the change of the group membership is done, then basically new messages can be sent again. Because you don't want to have messages which are sent halfway to the old members, halfway to the new members, and therefore, in that sense, you would have a very inconsistent behavior because part of it, the messages might not be delivered to the new members, part of it might be delivered to old members which actually left the group already. And therefore, in that sense, you need a coordinate way of changing the group membership. Well, if you do communication services, you could use UDP or TCP. TCP, that would be something like you would have a reliable data stream. If a message is missing, you have TCP support, basically the transmission to all the members, and you see it you redo the sending and you get support from TCP. UDP provides not the support, but you can see it on missing sequence numbers that you have to resend a message. But the resending has to be done on the application layer. And the one thing what we will look at it is ISIS. And J Groups uses a lot of functionality and a lot of experience achieved by the ISIS system. The next thing is we can look at group components. Here, the next thing is categorization, group, closed and open groups. Closed groups means here, as an outsider, you can't send to the group. What you can do is this one can send to a group member, and then this member can possibly distribute the messages to all the other members of the group. But from the outside, the group as a whole is not accessible for external processes. For the open groups here, this one can actually, the outsider can send a message to the group overall, and then it's automatically distributed. Therefore, in that sense here, management is a lot easier because the group as a whole is not known to the outside. Here, the group is known to all the other outside processes. Therefore, it's a little bit more complicated to manage the group. The other thing is you can have a distinction between a flat group and a hierarchical group. Here, flat groups would be something like peer groups, as you know, from peer-to-peer communication, where you don't have a distinction. With hierarchical groups, you would have a hierarchy of group members, and you would have something like, in a similar way, as you have a transaction, sub-transaction, therefore you would have group communication, subgroup communication, and so on. And that would be, for example, if you think of computer-supported cooperative work, it's very easy if you have, for example, a large conferencing situation. As you know, very often you have something like sub-conferencing. The two people, like in a face-to-face situation, two people or three people, like you have a large conferencing and two people interacting and setting up something like a sub-conferencing for a short time and interacting directly, and the global conferencing still continues and goes on. And therefore, in that sense, with a hierarchical group, you can model that also in a distributed situation, in a conferencing, that you might have this sub-conferencing, and then overall you have this global conferencing taking place. Implicit and explicit. Explicit, that's something like a way you have all the people listed, and for example in a conferencing situation that every member is explicitly listed. Implicit is something if you have a publish and subscribe situation. And very often if you have an implicit group, you not really know who is a member of it, because they subscribe to it, and then if communication takes place, they automatically propagate it to all subscription members and or members having a subscription. The management of groups, that we can do quite easily. What kind of operations do we have? Query, certainly, for group names. Creation, clearly, if you have operation to create a new groups, or the deletion of existing groups. The question is here, who is allowed to do the deletion of an existing group? Is that, for example, the creator of the group, that only the creator is allowed to do the deletion? Or we could also say the last member. It's something like we can say the last one turns the switch when the last one leaves the room. And therefore, in that sense, who does and actually the deletion? Joining and leaving, certainly in a dynamic group, it could be that it has to be done in a synchronized way, that you can't just join and leave. If you have an implicit group, that would mean like performing a subscription or unsubscribe when you want to leave it. Therefore, that's very easy to come and go. If you have an explicit group, then it could be group join means that you have an idle state of group communication and then perform the group join. Reading and modifying group attributes, and then also have, for example, what kind of encoding mechanisms are used for messages and so on. And then read information about the state of group members, how do they have problems and so on. Then here, group communication architecture, you would have something like a centralized group server which basically manages everything, or decentralized, as we already said, that we require then, when we do it decentralized, the replication of all the group membership information, and joining and leaving has to be done synchronously. But as I mentioned already before, it's costly. Very often you find the following approach, the hybrid approach. And in that sense, what we have is here something like a central group member or the group manager here. This GM is a group manager here. And in a local area network, you have a central group member, a group manager on each local area network, but on the other hand, you distribute it across the network. And therefore, in that sense, here is a complete local information about the membership here and here. And usually you don't have a direct interaction between the group members. The communication always takes place via the group managers. And therefore here you can have a unicasting of interaction between the different group managers. And here you use multicasting or broadcasting depending what kind of communication support is available. But usually on the local area network, you don't have unicasting. Usually what you have is here multicasting or group broadcasting. And that's a quite efficient way, this hybrid approach, to manage group membership. And that works pretty fine. And it also provide you very easily supports integration of mobile entities. So here supports mobile component. And these, if a mobile component migrates from here to here, basically the group managers get update information that the mobile component is now available here. And therefore, in that sense, it only needs to contact the central or the central group manager, and then this information is propagated to all the other central group members, group managers, and they only have to know the group managers, and they don't have to know all the individual group members, and in that sense, that makes a pretty efficient approach. Good. The next thing, what we can look at here, message dissemination, that's already mentioned here. The unicast, that's more on the internet. Group multicast or intergroup multicast here, that's an interesting part of it, because here basically you support the group communication across groups. And that makes it a very easy way. For example, if you have subgroups, then you can very easily have a communication across multiple subgroups. And broadcast, and with a hybrid approach, here you have, as I mentioned here, a local multicast. And here, very often, you use unicast. And because here in the internet, it really depends if you have routers which support group multicast. I mean, there exists a group multicast protocol, but not all routers support that. And usually here, the group managers support the dissemination across all the machines. Does everybody know about the IP multicasting? On the IP network? I mean, the point is here how it works. If you think of all the routers, I mean, if you look at the network, I mean, here all the machines basically are connected somewhere to a router. And like this one here, this one possibly here, then this one here, and this one here, and then you would have something like connectivity to all the different routers. I mean, you have a redundant network. And if you think of the internet situation, and if you say now this is a sender, and for example, if you assume, well, this is now a sender which basically makes a broadcast across the network, and you can just think of it, well, what does it mean when if you have these millions of routers in your network, and then you have a sender which basically makes in the internet a broadcast. Basically, it would saturate the whole network, and if you would have multiple broadcasting senders, then you would basically put the internet into its knees, because you have a few senders and very little information going across the network because of all the broadcasting. And usually what you have is that these routers, if you have a local area network, then basically they filter these broadcast messages out. They don't broadcast it into the internet. And now you would have a situation, and that's where the IP multicasting started a long time ago, where you had this interest group. For example, if you had a very interesting event and you wanted to distribute it to many receivers, but you can't use broadcasting to send send it to many receivers. You use something like IP multicasting protocol. And what that means that, for example, you would have the situation that this one produces a flow of information. But the point is, where does this flow to be sent to? And the point is here that this one says, I want to be a receiver. And this receiver says, well, I want to join the group here of this sender. This one notifies here, this one, okay, I want to be a receiver. This one says, okay, I don't have this packet for this group. It notifies here this one. And this one says, well, I have no information about this group, but it knows basically in backtracking the way that this one would have it. Therefore, in that sense, if this one does now a multicasting, it would deliver them the message here, basically this path to that receiver. This one would now say, okay, I also want to be a receiver. It provides the information to them, and this one would say, hey, I already a member of this group. Therefore, in that sense, it sends it to this here. But you see now, you have two receivers, but on this way, the packet is going only once. Therefore, you have two receivers, the packet goes only once, and it's only diverted to at the place where it has to be diverted. Then this one says, now I also want to be a receiver. It goes here. This one says, well, it doesn't have it. This one selects in backtracking that route or router, which is basically the best router. And usually if you have this routing, either distance vector or open shortest path first, depending what kind of routing protocol you use. And this one would say, well, the best router would this be. And it's not really deciding where it has finds it. Then this one says, oh, I already have it. And then it would basically deliver it that way. If you would have now another machine here, then this one would say, well, it would go here, here, here. Therefore, you would have also a dissemination in that way. Therefore, in that sense, what IP multicasting does, it keeps the messages together to one message as long as it can. And the moment where it has to split it, it splits it, like here. If this one says, I don't need it anymore, then it notifies, this one is notified. This one says, I don't need it anymore. This one gets notified, I don't need it anymore. It does not have any other consumers. Therefore, it notifies this one. This one says, well, fine. It canceled this here, but here it's still of interest. Therefore, in that sense, you try to keep the traffic in the IP network, in the internet, as low as possible. And in a sense, you can handle actually hundreds of thousands of receivers and still not completely saturate the internet infrastructure. And a few things where this IP multicasting was done, or an example of it, like, for example, the if you remember, you had this Mars rover moving around on the Mars, and they basically had this camera associated, and from NASA they distributed this information across the internet network, and it would have been completely full if you would have had receivers, and every receiver would have subscribed to the NASA server. then you would have replicas of these images going across the network. They actually used IP multicasting to do that, to keep the network communication as low as possible. Still, you had a high volume going because you had hundreds of thousands and millions of receivers looking at images sent by the Mars rovers. But you could keep it as low as possible. Good. That's when you have here. And that's also something like an implicit group, because here you have publish and subscribe situation. And message delivery. Certainly here the things, what we can, or what's important aspects are things like who gets the message, and here the question is who is a member of the group and who is not. And the other thing is, the point is here, when is a message delivered? And it does not mean not received, as we hear. We don't really think of not when a message is received. We basically think of delivering it to the application component. And very often it could be that a message is received at the site. Here we have the application component, and then possibly the message is put into something like a buffer, and then in the buffer it's stored, and then it's decided when it's actually delivered here. And it could be that there was another message coming from here, and which actually arrived later, much later in the buffer, but it's still selected as being first delivered to the application component compared with that message, because this one is supposedly a later message than this here message. Therefore, in that sense, we look at delivering it, and delivering it is here this step. And this is receiving, the receiving part of it. The point is here atomicity, and atomicity handles here this, who gets the message. And in the absence, certainly, of errors, we have the situation that we have an exactly once semantic, and the message is delivered to all the group members, and exactly once. And if you have an all or nothing situation, which is often called atomic broadcast, then it means that it's delivered to all group members or to none. And the atomicity facilitates here application programming, because the application programmer does not have to be concerned with message loss or message duplicates. As we hear, application programmer here does not have to deal with message loss or message duplicates, and because that would be handled by the underlying middleware handling group communication, and it would also help adaption of group composition, also here adaption of group composition in case of errors. And that would be done by the underlying middleware, and the application programmer does not have to deal with. Because if you have, as a programmer, have to deal with all that, it means that you will have to repeatedly check what's the group composition before you send a message and find out who is part of the group. Is it delivered or is it not delivered? And if you do that with the atomicity, then you don't have, if you have atomicity support, you don't have any problem with respect to that. We will later see that actually ISIS supports that automatically for you. And as a user or as an application programmer, you would say atomic broadcast. And then the system handles that for you. The sequence of message delivery, certainly here, if you think of this as a group consisting of S1, S2, S3, and if you have a message sent here by a client, in that sense we have an open group, sent a message by client 2, and you have the situation here. This would mean that actually in delivering it, it could be that at S2, the message is reordered, that first you deliver, that it could be that actually this one is delayed until here, and then it's actually delivered because you want to deliver M1 before M2. The other point is here, this one sends an M3, and that works, but then we have an M4, and this one sends the message, and the point is here, well, you have a failure here. Because this one also tries to deliver the message here, because it was sent before just before the failure happened, and the point is here, it can't deliver this here, and therefore if you have an atomic broadcast, therefore this M4 fails, and in order to guarantee atomicity, then this M4 should not be delivered to this here, these group members. Basically, what we wanted to have is here, we have a reconfiguration. So here, reconfiguration. And after the reconfiguration, then actually we deliver this to the new group. Because in the other case, we would not provide an atomic broadcast, and we can't really guarantee the atomicity. And I think we can stop here and.